Hello and welcome to the Healthy Pregnancy Revolution. I'm Stephanie Wilson, your host here with Nicole Belsma. Nicole is a best-selling author and founder of the Building Biology Movement in Australia. She is the CEO of the Australian College of Environmental Studies, has lectured at tertiary institutes for 30 years, has published in peer-reviewed journals, and is regularly consulted by the media to discuss mold, electromagnetic fields, and toxic chemicals. Her research explores the impact of environmental exposures on human health and their ramifications for clinical practice. Hi, Cole. How are you doing today?
I'm well, Stephanie.
Thank you for joining us.
Very welcome. Can't wait to talk about my favorite topic.
Awesome. So let's dive right in. How is it that you feel these environmental factors are affecting women's fertility and the effects it's going to have on their babies, their pregnancy, even their postpartum experience?
Well, this is a personal journey for me because, you know, at the time I was working as a naturopath and acupuncturist for 15 years, and I noticed very strong correlations between my patients' health and their homes, especially, you know, patients with asthma and allergies. They will talk about the mold in their house. With people with insomnia, sleep disturbances and headaches, they'll often be sleeping with digital devices in their bedroom or near a smart meter, for example. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until I moved into my home, the first home we bought, that from the time we moved in, within days, we developed sleep disturbances. Within 12 months, I fell pregnant, got miscarried, and then subsequently had 10 miscarriages in this house. And we went to every specialist. We didn't qualify for IVF because I got pregnant easily. And it was very, very interesting. I noticed that all of our symptoms began when we moved into this lovely home, half an acre on the river, in this beautiful, pristine environment. And then when I started to really look at what was going on in the house, I noticed we were sleeping on the other side of the wall of the meter panel, and the magnetic fields would increase during the night when the hot water service would kick in. We had a dowser out who checked that there was significant geopathic stress under the bed. We had Parks Victoria from the council coming over, spraying our blackberry bushes with pesticides. And we also lived on a T intersection. So I started to measure the traffic related air pollutants that would come into the master bedroom and take hours to dissipate. So this beautiful home, you couldn't see or smell anything issues. But since we moved there, you know, I had this, all my miscarriages there, and no one in the medical industry was able to help us. We'd gone to the recurrent miscarriage clinic at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. And they said, we don't know why you're miscarrying. You're just going to have to keep trying. So it was quite a journey, and starting to piece together when things started to go pear-shaped. Mm-hmm. And really felt that my home was contributing. I said to my husband at the time, because of the issues in the master bedroom, let's go to the back bedroom, which we did. And then I fell pregnant naturally with twins, and the rest is history.
Oh, wow. What a story. Mm-hmm. Geopathic stress.
Geo means, and pathos means disease arising from, and geo is from the earth. So, you know, when you look at a lot of the Aboriginal connections to the earth, you've got space, sacred sites, and then you have sites of geopathic stress where there could be, for example, there's parts near Uluru, near Ayers Rock in the middle of Central Australia that the Aboriginals never went near. And, you know, their explanation was because when they observed the animals, they would not be feeding off this part of the land. They would not sleep in this part of the land. So they observed what the animals and the type of plants growing there. Lo and behold, years down the track, they discovered it was very high in uranium and radioactive nucleotides. So it's very dangerous. And they knew just by observing the animals and the plants. So geopathic stress can be due to underground fault lines, geomagnetic lines, ley lines, water courses, etc. So it's quite an ancient form of dowsing to pick up things within the earth that could impact human health. And now, from a more scientific perspective, with fault lines, we know it creates like a piezoelectric effect where the pressure between the rocks can create this electromagnetic energy that can come up through the earth. And if you're sleeping above that, that can create stress. Von Pohl did some research in the 1920s in Germany to show cancer rates were higher where there was geopathic stress near the town.
That is a new term for me. That's extraordinarily interesting. Is that relating to, I've seen you discussing geomancy. Am I saying that the right way?
Yes. Yes, geomancy. So, you know, when the Aboriginals go walkabout, they're actually following the song lines of their ancestors. So they know where they're going, and it's just something they're tuned into because they've been doing that for millennia. It's really this beautiful art of understanding our connection to the earth. And in many ways, I think, you know, our disconnection to the earth, the way we build our homes, our concrete slabs, our metal steel frame and our metal buildings, etc., has completely disconnected us from the terrestrial radiation that we've evolved on. So we've evolved based on the earth, exposure to the earth's magnetic field, to the Schumann resonance in the atmosphere, which is created from all the lightning strikes that are occurring at any given moment on the earth, creates this voltage in the atmosphere called the Schumann resonance. NASA program had to replicate the Schumann resonance in the space capsule, otherwise the astronauts would get depressed. And ironically, the Schumann resonance is at the same frequencies at the delta waves in the brain. So, you know, we have this remarkable biosphere called planet Earth that we've evolved on. And what we've done in the last four decades is dramatically change that landscape with man-made electromagnetic fields, including, you know, putting up over 20,000 satellites to set up the 5G network and bathed the planet with these man-made electromagnetic fields with no requirements to prove safety. So we are in a huge experiment where we are the guinea pigs, where our children will be bathed to these man-made electromagnetic fields that doesn't mimic anything in nature, and they'll be exposed from the cradle to the grave at levels known to cause adverse health effects. So this is something that's very concerning, which is why in your own home, in your workplace, etc., you don't want to be exposed to these artificial man-made electromagnetic fields. We know from a fertility perspective they impact sperm because of the radiation emitted from cell phones, especially if they're on your person around the belt, that they can cause DNA strand breaks through the creating oxidative stress.
You mentioned that you guys moved rooms in your home to get away from the wall where the electrical panel was. Is there anything that we can do in regards to what you're referring to and where our home is located, and how do we know if we're on a fault line? How do we research these things? How can someone make sure that they're not moving into a home to have the same experience that you went through?
That's a great question. And I've just spent, you know, over two decades researching that. It's just been, and that's why I wrote my book, Healthy Home, Healthy Family, to look at the exposure zones. How far do you need to be from your power lines on the street, from the high voltage transmission lines, from mobile phone base stations, from coal seam gas, wind turbines, traffic related air pollutants, in order to reduce your exposure to things that we know that can cause adverse health effects. So that is in my book and also my website. There's quite a bit of information. But that's important questions. Before you buy a block of land, you want to make sure that you're not going to expose your family to hazards that could dramatically impact your health. And a good example would be, you know, if you live near a T intersection or you live 500 metres downwind from heavy traffic, your incidence of heart and lung related diseases will dramatically escalate. A few weeks ago, they published a very important study to show that lung cancer in non-smokers was directly correlated with outdoor air pollution. And these pollutant areas are near heavy traffic, they're near industry, they're near shipping ports. So, you know, living near 500 metres downwind from traffic where people stop and start their cars, where they accelerate and decelerate, that's when they emit most traffic-related air pollutants. Other things like, you know, exercising near heavy traffic, cycling, walking is a big no, because whilst exercise is important, if you do it in an area where there's heavy traffic, you are inhaling these particulate matter, which dramatically increase your risk for asthma, allergies, and heart attacks and high blood pressure. So, you know, these are the things you need to consider when it comes to your living environment. You want to be in an area where there's, to me, the trees are the lungs of the planet. So there's sufficient trees where they act as the filter, because if you don't get a filter, your body becomes the filter. And you'll find when I'm doing an assessment of a home, I'll look and at the dust in the home. If it's black towards the front of the house near the heavy traffic, that's the wear and tear of the tires, that's the diesel particulates, it's the traffic-related air pollutants, and it has a darker colour to the dust. As you walk towards the back of the house, the dust becomes more like a brown colour, as to be expected. So if you don't keep those windows closed and don't have an air purifier to the front of the house, if you live near heavy traffic, your lungs become the filter. And that's the cost of living in these inner city areas. In fact, recently there was an interesting study here in Australia about 4 weeks ago that showed that if you've got chickens in inner city areas in Sydney, they had levels of lead in the chickens that were 40 times higher than a factory chook. And that's simply because you are living in an inner city area where there's high levels of lead dust. And even though we've removed lead, primarily removed lead from our petrol, from our gasoline, so to speak, that we use tons and tons and tons of lead of petrol for decades in Western countries, that dust is sitting on the road. It's sitting along our inner city areas. It's sitting along the roads, etc. So it didn't go anywhere. Lead doesn't break down. And that's the thing. As a building biologist, I train my students. If your clients live in inner city areas, they're going to be exposed to high levels of electromagnetic fields, high levels of traffic-related air pollutants. And therefore, having a vegetable patch or having chooks in their yards is not a good thing. Drinking from tank water is not a good thing because that level of dust is getting into everything and they need to keep their house closed. They need air purifiers. Similarly, living on a golf course is something that a lot of retirees do. Pesticides are incredibly toxic. If you live on a golf course, I mean, if you live within 1 kilometre of a golf course, your level of pesticides in your body are likely to be very high. One of my colleagues is a top naturopath in Sydney. She's been on an organic diet for decades. She lives a pristine lifestyle. And when I said to her, measure your pesticide levels, glyphosate, organophosphates, and they were off the chart, her kids and her, simply because she lived a block away from a golf course. People don't think about this. Naturopaths don't think about this, but it is a huge issue. So they moved. They moved into, Blue Mountains, into a more pristine environment, because these are things that you can't control. But the evidence is very clear that if you live within certain zones from, crop dusting, golf courses, turf farms, traffic-related air pollutants, wind turbines, all those things I mentioned, then that potentially will increase your exposure to hazards that are known to cause adverse health effects.
Oh, you just opened up my mind to so many things that you're right, most of us don't think of, including naturopaths themselves.
When it comes to fertility, mm-hmm. the problem with the fertility is that it's the least important for the body. Our role as a species is to pass on our genetic code. That's mm-hmm. All species on Earth, that's what we do. The problem is, as soon as you're unwell, as soon as your system in your body is not well, the first system to shut down is the reproductive system. Yep. It's like, elite athletes. The first thing a woman will do as an elite athlete is stop her period because she's conserving energy to keep her survival. So it's the first thing to go. And in many ways, that's why when it comes to fertility, you need to make sure your health in every other organ, every other system of your body is really well. You cannot be well if you're living in a moldy environment. That affects leptin receptors, it affects androgens, it affects your hormones, it affects the thyroid gland dramatically. So one of the first things I'd recommend if you're looking at fertility is to check if the house has got any mold, if it has any visible mold, any odour. Odour is a big red flag because odour implies microbial growth. If you smell damp, musty odours, their mould is growing somewhere in the home and you may not necessarily see it on the surfaces. It could be hidden in a wall cavity, subfloor or roofoid. So if you have got sick since moving into the house, if you have symptoms of asthma or allergies, if you get recurrent colds and flus that keep coming back and they don't respond to treatment, either herbs or antibiotics, etc., think mold. If you're developing chronic fatigue-like symptoms, think mold. It is probably the number one cause of chronic fatigue that we now know of. Fibromyalgia, sleep disturbances, brain fog, poor concentration, poor memory. So with fertility, definitely you want to check that there's no mold in the environment, because no matter what you do, no matter who you see, unless you address that, either get out of that environment or get it remediated if it is an issue, then your fertility will be impacted dramatically. So that's one of the first things for fertility I would recommend people to look at, is to make sure there is no mold. So any water damage, any floods, you only have 48 hours after a flood to dry it out. If you don't dry it out within 48 hours, you have microbial growth, which means high levels of fungal particulate like spores and hyphae will be in the air. They'll settle on the surfaces to create what we call condition two, which means high levels of settled spores on the surfaces. And that in itself, you don't have to see or smell mold to have dramatic impacts by it. So that's where you might need to get a ICRC mold remediator to come in and actually assess, or an IEP, indoor environmental professional in the US to assess that. In Australia, you get a building biologist to assess that to see if it's an issue or not. But mold is probably the first thing I would get clients if they suspect, if they've had any drainage problems, roof leaks, flood events, anything like that, where it wasn't dry within 48 hours, and they have any of the symptoms I mentioned, then that's the first thing I would get them to do, because you will find that your fertility, your thyroid will be dramatically impacted by these by this exposure.
And even if we don't have mold in the home, you often, I'm sure, would advise we should have air filters, water filters.
Yes, absolutely. So the next one is toxicants or chemicals, man-made chemicals. And it's a big one because there's a whole group of chemicals called endocrine disrupting chemicals that can dramatically impact people's fertility. The problem with that is that these chemicals can pass in utero. So your mother may have been exposed. When it comes to taking a history, your practitioner should be taking a history of your grandmother, your mother, where they were born, where they live, their exposure to chemicals, toxic metals, et cetera, because a lot of that will be passed in utero to you. Right. So remember, when a mother is pregnant with a female at 14 weeks, what you'll find is that anything that is in the mother's system, if she's got a lot of nausea during pregnancy and she can't keep food down, her bones will start to degrade and demineralize as a food source and release that lead into the blood where it goes to the placenta. So a lot of more and more kids are born with high levels of lead because it's happening through the placenta. Also, breast milk is very fat, very much fatty, and it's very important prebiotic, of course, for the microbiome of the child. It's so critical. However, many of the persistent organic chemicals, the environmental chemicals, are fat loving. So they will be passed through the breast milk. And unfortunately, the breast milk is so efficient at passing through these chemicals that it is one of the most useful biomarkers, according to the World Health Organization, to assess toxicity. So it's really important, if you decide that you want to have children, that you need to start from your grandparents, or at least your mother, to make sure her toxic load, she wasn't a smoker, where she's going to be exposed to heaps of toxic metals, et cetera. That, you know, if she was a smoker, that's critical in your toxic load. If she lived in homes where there was lead, if she lived in homes where there was mold, these things are very important in the history. But the big one is going to be the hormone disrupting chemicals. Now, there are over 195 million chemicals registered for use on the world's largest database, the Chemical Abstract Service. And every 60 seconds, another 20 chemicals are registered for use, which is around 200,000 new chemicals every week. 90% of these chemicals have never been tested for their impact on human health. The global sale of chemicals, for example, increased from $171 billion in 1970 to over $5 trillion in 2017. Now, this year, there was a study that was published that showed that environmental chemical exposures has crossed the planetary boundary considered safe for humanity. And our exposure to environmental chemicals, despite this, is expected to double or even triple by 2050. So what we dramatically need is a reduction in chemicals. And the way to do that is to prevent this rampant consumerism. You need to stop buying stuff. You need, really think about things you put on your skin, Most, if it's not edible, don't put it on your skin because you absorb huge amounts of chemicals through your skin. You know, all this marketing hype on anti-aging, all this BS that women are encouraged to buy is not recommended. Go back to like what the Polynesian women do, which is natural seed and nut oils, providing you don't have a seed or nut allergy. You know, coconut oil, I use to get rid of my mascara. So my whole makeup regime is mascara, and then I take it off with coconut oil on a cotton tip. And that's it. I actually don't wear any other makeup apart from that, which means I don't have to use any cleansers to get it off because I might use a man-made, you know, a handmade scrub, like a bit of sand or salt or coffee grains with a bit of, you know, oil, like coconut oil, and use it as my scrub occasionally. But that's about it. I was thinking my next book would be Get That Shit Off Your Face and how women are exposed to high levels of chemicals that are getting into their skin and passing through the placenta. So the first thing I'd recommend any woman of reproductive age is to reduce their toxicity by really thinking twice about what they're putting on their skin that gets into the systemic circulation. It needs to be edible. So, you know, your natural seed and nut oils, your jojoba oil is probably one of the best, camellia nut oil, macadamia oil. Vegetable oils, you know, providing they're cold pressed, and then maybe with a few essential oils, and then either, you know, salt as a scrub, make your own stuff basically is really important. The other one, of course, is your diet. You're putting through 22 tons of food through your gut, and that's where a lot of the toxicity is going to happen. So, you know, fish in 2016, the Danish government had a media campaign to every obstetric clinic, warning pregnant women not to use makeup and to reduce the incidence of fish to no more than one fish meal per month, because fish is contaminated with PCBs, polychlorinated bisphenols, which have been banned but are still persisting in our aquatic life. And of course, because of lead. When there's an oil spill in the ocean, it's full of toxic metals. And of course, that goes through the food chain from the algae right up to the large predators. So no more than one fish meal per month is the recommendation if you're a woman of reproductive age. Now, in theory, fish is an excellent source of protein and essential fatty acids. You do need the EFAs. And the way I get this is to buy EPA DHA oil in a capsule where it's been purified, where they've checked for toxic metals. So, you know, that's really definitely one of an important supplement that most women of reproductive age would benefit from, especially if they're wanting to get pregnant. So toxic endocrine disrupting chemicals actually comes through many, many sources. The problem with the environmental endocrine disrupting chemicals is they don't act the same way. The xenoestrogens or the environmental estrogens found in these chemicals don't act the same way as the endogenous estrogens found in your body. What you generally find is that during pregnancy, that a woman will, if she's got these xenoestrogens, that they will be released into exposed to the fetus, whereas the normal endogenous estrogens up to week 14 are held by plasma protein. So the body has a way of protecting the unborn fetus, male or female, from high levels of estrogen hormone. And it does it by secreting plasma proteins that the estrogens will bind to during certain stages of the pregnancy. If you have high levels of xenoestrogens, i.e., man-made estrogens found in environmental chemicals, they don't bind to the plasma proteins. So essentially, what's happening is these xenoestrogens are getting through into the placenta where they're exposing the unborn fetus to high levels of estrogens. And of course, that is a disaster. You don't want that happening. So there are very big differences between xenoestrogens or estrogens that are foreign to the body that are found in these chemicals, and of course, endogenous estrogens. Now, what people don't forget is that up until 7 weeks of age, the human embryo contains both the male and female anatomical tract. So all human embryos have both a male and female anatomical tract up to around 7 weeks of the embryo's life, regardless of its genetic makeup, whether it's an XY or whether it's a double X and anything in between. So if at week by week 14, the Y gene on the X on the Y chromosome then creates a message in the male embryo. So the Y gene on the Y gene of the male embryo secretes testosterone, and what that does is it shrivels up the Müllerian ducts, the female tract, which means that male, that XY embryo becomes a male. Now, if that doesn't happen by week 14, what happens is that that XY male, genetically male embryo actually becomes a female phenotype. And she will develop secondary sex characteristics that are generic for a female, including vagina, breasts, everything. But when she looks, tries to become pregnant, she won't be able to because she doesn't have ovaries. And in fact, she's a XY genetically a male. Now, what we're concerned about is all these estrogens that we've exposed ourselves to through these chemicals, which I'll talk about what chemicals they are, is that they're in the body and they're affecting what the genetic expression of our genes during the embryos, you know, during pregnancy. And this is not a good thing. So it's really important that you reduce your exposure to these xenoestrogens as quickly as possible before you even think about getting pregnant. Because, you know, we don't know, is this contributing to this gender mix that we're, you know, could the, in fact, right. that, you know, the fact that they're males, females, not sure, et cetera. Did we actually create this ourselves through these xenoestrogens? I don't know. These are questions that we need to ask as researchers, mm-hmm. because we do know that the body's so finely tuned. These hormones act in parts per trillion. They're so finely tuned to very, very small levels, as we found with BPA, plastics, et cetera. So this is a big concern. We know that male mice, when they're exposed to high levels of estrogen in the womb, that it can lead to those male mice killing their own infants later on when they become adults, that they become aggressive later on in life, that it can cause, you know, increase their prostate glands, et cetera. So we know phthalate exposure in utero could potentially increase risk for breast cancers later on in life, et cetera. So, you know, you really want to make sure that your toxic load in your body is as low as possible before you even get pregnant, let alone when you are pregnant. So that's really, really important, because the low doses do matter, and they are now thought to contribute to genital malformations like, you know, hyperspadias and undescended testicles in males, declining sperm count. Sperm count has dropped more than 50% in the last 50 years. It's a disaster for the human species, because instead of looking at what's causing this, what we've done is we've reduced the medical range as to what's healthy. You know, in the past, I think it was about 133 million sperm per meal. Now it's, you know, 30 million sperm per meal, which is ridiculous. What's considered normal compared to what was normal 50 years ago. And of course, hormone disrupting chemicals are potentially a huge contributing factor to that. So males need to reduce their exposure to these chemicals as well. And right. and that's why I think it's really important we look at what those chemicals are. Did you want me to go through them?
Yes, just can't
leave you in the lurch.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the big one's perfume. Any form of artificial fragrance. Many perfumes contain phthalates. Phthalates are hormone-disrupting chemicals that increase the longevity of the perfume. So phthalates are a very big no. Do not wear perfume. Do not wear aftershaves where there are any form of artificial perfumes are a big no. If it's an essential oil-based perfume, it's likely to be better. But even then, if I'm pregnant, I would not recommend essential oils in your personal care until after you've given birth. So perfume is the big problem, without a shadow of a doubt. Air fresheners, any artificial fragrances, including in your laundry products, on your clothes, in your air that you're spraying, and of course perfumes itself are a big, big no, because they may contain phthalates, which can impact hormones. The next one are things like your plastics. Bisphenols, of course, are in your number 7 plastics, and they should be removed. BPA, your BPA-free products are actually likely to contain bisphenol S, Because it's not BPA, so incorrect in their marketing they're saying it's BPA free, which is true, but many of the BPA free plastics contain bisphenol S and F. So no plastics. If you're going to drink from containers, don't use plastics. Instead, use stainless steel or glass is a better option if you're going to drink from that. And for kids, stainless steel bottles are far better. So avoid number 7 plastics. Generally try and avoid drinking from plastics, full stop. The next plastic is polystyrene. That contains nonylphenols, which can mimic estrogens in the body. So it's really important that you avoid polystyrene-related plastics, that you don't store or heat or freeze food in plastics, including your polystyrene. So polystyrene is an interesting one because it contains nonylphenol, which is a very strong hormone disruptor. And the first time they discovered that was in the early 90s when Carla Sonnenschein and Anna Soto were looking at breast cancer and estrogen. And basically what they did is they got a whole lot of test tubes, added breast cancer cells to all of them, added estrogen hormone to half of them, and they found that the breast cancer cells multiplied when it was exposed to estrogen. What they didn't anticipate is in the control group where it just had breast cancer cells in the test tubes, they multiplied as well. And they go, well, how can the control group multiply its breast cancer cells when there was no estrogen added? And what they found eventually was that the manufacturer of the test tube changed the constituents within the plastic test tube, and it contained nonylphenol, which is a chemical that is a very strong hormone disrupting chemical. So they found that the chemical in the test tube was causing the breast cancer cells to multiply, and that's nonylphenol, which is found in your polystyrene plastics. So nonylphenol should definitely not be don't heat or freeze foods in plastics.
I've heard heat, of course. I've never heard of freeze.
Yeah, freezing will also leach phthalates and other plastics, other constituents in them. So do not freeze food in plastic. You're best to put it in glass. If you've got a plastic lid, whether it's polypropylene or polyethylene, that's fine because, you know, the food isn't touching the lid, so don't worry about the lid. But you definitely want plastic glass when it comes to freezing or heating plastic heating food. Don't put it in plastics. The other plastic that's problematic is PVC, polyvinyl chloride. Now, because it contains phthalates, now PVC and vinyl, you do not or want vinyl in your home. You don't want vinyl floors. You don't want vinyl shower curtains because the vinyl floors, that plastic comes out and it goes into the dust of the carpet. And they've found, there's a couple of studies that show breast cancer risks higher in houses where they had vinyl floors, where the vinyl was in the household dust and it's a hormone disrupting chemical. So vinyl is very problematic. It's like, to me, the next asbestos, but in a different way. Vinyl is something I would never recommend someone put inside their home. So you definitely want to.
That's so huge. Because that's like, I don't, at least here I know. I mean, in the States, it is that PVC or luxury vinyl flooring. I'm sure everyone's heard of that. Like luxury is what it's called now. Luxury vinyl flooring. It's such a, you know, a lot of people, I guess, can't tell the difference between that and hardwood, real wood. And it's so popular. I feel like I'm hearing about it more and more. I didn't know it seems like it's non-harmful. You're just walking on it, but that's incredible that you pointed that out.
Yeah. And like PVC, they use lead stabilizers. So you've got lead in them as well. A lot of the old PVC was stabilized with lead. So if you're drinking from PVC in your tank water, so you've got tank water and then you've got a PVC pipe to your house, you increase your risk for lead. Increase your risk for phthalates. So that's a big no. This is right. This is marketing hype. You know, luxury vinyl. How clever is that? You want to make sure that vinyl is phthalate free. So I'll generally contact them to say, is this phthalate free? And can you prove that with, you know, NADA accredited testing that it actually has no phthalates in it? I would not recommend vinyl at all in anyone's home, especially if they're thinking about, you know, wanting to be a woman of reproductive age. That would be definitely problematic for me. That's a big, big no, absolutely. So other forms of plastics, they're the main ones. PVC, that's number 3 plastic, polystyrene, which is a number 6 plastic, and bisphenols or all the other plastics, number 7. you want to avoid them as much as possible. Mm-hmm. The next one is perfluorooctanoic acid. So perfluoroalkyl substances, which are your non-stick chemicals. They're used in your clothing, waterproof clothing. They're used in your non-stick pots and pans and cookware and bakeware and food packaging, especially pizza boxes, popcorn bags, and baking paper. One of the highest sources of PFAS is popcorn bags. The load of chemicals in popcorn bags, is especially the microwave popcorn bags, is so extraordinary that you do not want you or your kids using that at all. Otherwise, your level of PFAS, which is a persistent organic pollutant, will be in your body and probably stay in your body indefinitely because it stays in the fatty tissue. So microwave popcorn bags should not be used at all. You know, pizza.
And it's so much fun to make homemade popcorn, coconut oil and organic popcorn.
No, pop so you need to pop it on the stove. Exactly right. Do it the old-fashioned way in a stainless pot.
It's fun.
Do not use microwave popcorn bags. Yep. They are the very high sources of PFAS, which is persistent in the body. It's found in every adult that's ever been tested, according to the U.S. National Health and Nutritional Examination Survey. They're finding them in children that are being born every generation. It's such a disaster.
Yeah.
So PFAS is a big problem. Non-stick cookware, if you're going to use non-stick cookware, use a ceramic line cookware that's PFOA free, as opposed to, you know, conventional non-stick. And if the non-stick starts to peel off or it's peeling on the pan, throw it out. Do not use it because it's going to be leaching, which is definitely problematic. Okay, so avoid non-stick cookware or use non-stick cookware that's ceramic lined. Minimize processed food, and that's really good advice. You know, minimize your packaging and processed food, but buy everything and make everything from scratch so you know exactly what's in it. You know, use your salt and your pepper and your, you know, there's some really good, spices and things you can get, dried onions and things that don't contain MSG and all those, you know, your stock and things like that. Make stock from scratch. So the best advice I can give, if you're thinking about having kids, is make everything yourself from scratch so you know exactly what's in the food. You know, stick with your fruit and stick with your vegetables and your meats and your proteins and reduce your carbs. And, you know, I don't want to go into detail on diet because this is not what the talk is about, but, you know, it's really going back to basics in many, many ways. With water, you mentioned water, very important that you drink a filtered water. You cannot, in the States, I believe, a significant proportion of your of the public drink from bore and well water. That's not ideal because unless you're testing it all the time, you don't know if there's pesticides, PFOA, polychlorinated biophenyls, toxic metals, industry, pests, all that stuff. It's like, it's a real issue. So I would suggest not drinking bore well water. You're best to either bring it in or to think of another source, ideally municipal or tap water that's been filtered. Another thing that came up recently for us last year is the Australian government announced it's going to spend $2 billion replacing brass taps. The brass taps we imported from Asia actually had lead in them, in the valves. It's extraordinary. It's new houses had brass taps that had high levels of lead in them. I mean, it's just such a disaster. Right. You think dealt with lead because it's in the paint. If the house is old, you know, and that's another thing, you know, as a woman, if you're thinking about getting pregnant, you know, and you live in a house that's built prior to 1990, check for lead. Do not renovate or sand back that paint until you've checked for lead. Mm-hmm. Because if you expose that lead dust, if you inhale that, you will pass it on to the embryo, and that child will be born with high levels of lead. It's very difficult to get it out of the system because the chemicals, the chelating agents they use, can cause kidney and liver failure. So you want to make sure you don't get exposed to lead when you're renovating your house. Must check it first before you even think about renovating, unless you just paint over it without sanding back that lead paint. Mm-hmm. There are companies that specifically can remove the lead paint from the home safely before you consider renovating. So that's a very big one that you must consider if you're going to have children or get pregnant. Going back to water filters, yes, lead in lead solder, in copper pipe, copper exposure in our drinking water, our tap water. They use aluminium as a flocculating agent to get rid of sediment in the water supply, so we could have aluminium in it. Also, if you drink hot water and your hot water service has an aluminium anode, then never ever drink hot water from the tap. Really important, don't put hot water in your kettles, because if you have a hot water tank and it has an aluminium anode, which is a stick that they put into the hot water tank to prevent it corroding, to increase the service life of the hot water service, then it's leaching aluminium ions into the water, which you are drinking. And of course, they're still saying is aluminium associated with dementia and Alzheimer's. So never, ever use hot water from a tap to drink from. Only use cold water. For your cooking, your pots and pans, and for your drinking. And of course, a filter is essential. I have a reverse osmosis filter. It removes everything, including fluoride. I do not want fluoride in my drinking water. Countries in the world do not fluoridate their water supply because it's unethical to mass medicate an entire population with a pharmaceutical drug, which fluoride is, because it's used to treat dental decay and plaque. So it's really important to have a RO filter. I think it's the only one to have. Yes, you can have other filters that have pre-sediment and carbon filters that will remove your pesticides and your sediment. But to me, I don't want fluoride in the water supply. I don't mind using fluoridated toothpaste that I can spit out, but I do not want it in my water supply. So that's probably the most important message in this talk, is a water filter is not a luxury. It's an absolute necessity to reduce your toxic load. If you're drinking bore well water, don't, you know, maybe bathe in it, but definitely do not drink bore well water, because you don't know what's in it and it's changing all the time. If you've got tank water, you still need a water filter because of the lead flashing, PVC downpipes, pesticide, lead, dust exposure, because whatever's in your community, it's going to be on the tanks, on the roof catchment area. So you'll be drinking that as well. So I definitely would say to, you know, have a water filter. In terms of estrogens and EDCs, endocrine disrupting chemicals in the air, they would include pesticides. Many pesticides are hormone disrupting chemicals. So if you live in farming communities, you know, within a kilometre of where there's crop dusting, you need to seal your home and have an air purifier that has a HEPA filter and a carbon filter, or consider moving away because pesticides are incredibly toxic and they're persistent in the body and pass through the placenta, especially the organic chlorines, etc. Toxic metals, you want to check your toxic metal loads. If you're smoking, that's a big number one. Don't smoke. If you're smoking, you're exposed to over 5,000 chemicals, including lead, and many toxic metals, which will be passed through the placenta. So if you have smoked, then you need to detox for a considerable period of time before you consider getting pregnant, because you'll be passing that in through the uterus, through the placenta, sorry. That's important. So I would get your toxic metals checked through the Good Naturopath to see what your toxic metal load is before you get pregnant. You know, you don't want mercury, lead, arsenic, all of those chemicals. And of course, your dental history is really important. You know, that a lot of people, if they've got amalgam fillings, they are corroding all the time. They are leaching all the time. So you want to get to a really good integrative dentist that can use a rubber dam and use oxygen and get rid of the mercury without exposing you at the same time, which is not easy to do. Take charcoal capsules, for example. But, you know, amalgam fillings are not ideal. And, of course, it can act as an antenna to electromagnetic fields when you're on your cell phone. So another thing. Lead in homes, as I mentioned, will be in the dust if you've got old paint. You need to sort that out before you even consider getting pregnant. If you live in an old home, get it checked for lead and then get a company that can come in and assess and remove the lead from the home, which isn't going to be cheap. So your option might be cheaper to move, because lead is so toxic to an unborn child. We know it dramatically increases their IQ. We know a significant proportion of male prisoners who are illiterate is likely to be due to high levels of lead in their body, in their blood. So they didn't have a chance to be literate. They didn't have a chance to have a good academic or education because they had a low IQ because of lead exposure. So these things you don't want your child to be exposed to before you think about getting pregnant. Yes, so take your shoes off before you go in the home because you'll track the pesticides on your shoes because the council spray tons and tons of pesticides outside. As soon as you go outside, there's pesticides. So take your shoes off. Make sure when you're dusting the home that you use a microfiber cloth that's slightly damp so you collect the dust. It's really important to not have dust in the home. Dust is like Maccas for mold. As soon as there's moisture or high levels of humidity, it's going to be microbial growth in the dust. The dust contains all your allergens, dust mite, dander, skin cells, pet dander, pests, and all those allergens, as well as the lead and all the solvents and the chemicals and the air fresheners. So how you deal with the dust in the home will determine how well you reduce your exposure to chemicals, allergens, toxic metals. So that's really, really important. Use a vacuum cleaner fitted with a HEPA filter is very important to reduce the dust load. So it has a high efficiency particulate air filter, and that means it will filter and the allergens and the dust. So that's important to keep a healthy home. Obviously, don't have any vinyl floors and don't have any vinyl curtains. That's a really big no, because when the sun hits a vinyl curtain, it releases those chemicals into the air, which is very problematic. Yeah. Dermal, you don't want to touch cash receipts. Children's toys should not be, you know, made from PVC, like your rubber ducks and your bathing toys. And of course, personal care products should not contain fragrances, and cleaning products should not contain N9 or alkyl phenols. So try and go back to basics. Use more dishwashing liquids to clean the home as an emulsifier with your microfiber cloths is better. So if I was to summarise how to reduce your exposures to hormone-disrupting chemicals, and I know I've given a lot of information, a lot of it's in my book, as incredible. I mentioned, yes. Which you can get from Book Depository, I believe, internationally.
Also, even on Amazon, I actually just looked it up. You are on Amazon, Healthy Home, Healthy Family. Everyone needs this book.
Really? I'm on Amazon. I didn't realise that.
You are.
I'm also creating a course for the public, which I'll launch mid-next year, on how to create a healthy home. It'll be really good practical videos and tips of what a healthy home is and how to create a healthy home if you're thinking about getting pregnant and all these other things. So check my website, buildingbiology.com.au, for that. So reducing your chemical exposure to hormone disruptors, don't freeze or heat food and beverages in plastic. Avoid tin food because it could contain BPA. Food packaging should only be things like glass, ceramics, stainless steel, Corningware if you're going to heat or freeze food. Avoid non-stick cookware unless it has a ceramic lined and it's PFOA free. Buy organic food whenever you can. Don't exercise near heavy traffic. Make sure your new furnishings and bedding is aired in the sun before you actually bring into the house, because it can contain a lot of flame retardants and things like that, formaldehyde, for example. Avoid waterproofed furnishings. So don't spray your furnishings with waterproofing chemicals because they're full of flame retardants and non-stick PFO, you know, perfluoroalkyl substances, which are really toxic. So don't use those chemicals. Think about chemicals you bring into your food, on your body and in your house. Don't use them. Go back to basics. You know, dishwashing liquid, microfiber cloths is a great way to clean the home, you know, and elbow grease. Unfortunately, that's what it's going to take. Good ventilation in rooms with new electronic devices, you know, passive ventilation, open your windows, providing you're not near heavy traffic, providing you're not near crop dusting or anything like that. Non-chemical forms of pest management. Don't use pesticides in the home. Make sure you've got good fly screens on the doors. Make sure you don't have food and water lying around the outside of the house that are attracting rodents and animals and, you know, all those things. And good integrated pest management is important. Baits are fine, providing kids and animals can't access them. If they've got chemicals in them, the baits are fine. However, don't spray pesticides and fly sprays around the house, because it'll settle on the dust, settle on your surfaces, and then the kids are going to be, you know, putting it into their mouth. So that's a big no. Cosmetics, less is best. Get that shit off your face. Think about what's in it, because a lot of the preservatives in the skincare products are actually full of pesticides. That's what they use as preservatives. Avoid antibacterial products. This sanitizer, there's no place in a healthy home for sanitizer. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to leave you with, is to really think about, you have more bacteria in your body than you have human cells. You are a walking, talking bacterium. When you bring in sanitizer and antibacterials in the home, you're killing life. You're killing yourself, because what they've found is that, you know, in the Amish community where they don't use pesticides and they live a very basic life, you know, no electricity, et cetera, they have virtually no asthma or allergies in their communities. When they compared it in a study to the Hutterites live an almost identical lifestyle to the Amish, but their kids have asthma and allergies similar to Western children. And they realized the reason was, they think, is because they're using pesticides in their farming. Pesticides are antibacterials. And, of course, that meant less endotoxins, less bacteria in the household dust. So what they found was that in the Amish home, they have high levels of bacterial diversity in the household dust. The more the diverse the bacteria was in the household dust, the healthier the kids are. So this use of cleaning products, ammonia, bleach, sanitizers is insane. You are creating harmful homes for your kids because you're killing off the natural bacteria, most of which is shedding from your skin, Staphylococcus, for example, Pseudomonas, Micrococcus, that your kids need to be exposed to stimulate a healthy immune response. Mm-hmm. So the more diverse the bacteria is in the household dust, especially the floor, the less likely your kids will have asthma and allergies. But what have we done in Western cultures? We've convinced the population that bacteria is bad and a healthy home is a sterile home. That's BS. That, in fact, is the antithesis of what a healthy home is. So I really want you to question a lot of the marketing hype that you've been fed and actually go back to basics, which is really clean air, clean water, water filter, you know, clean air, living in environments where there's more trees that create the filter instead of you, bringing in less crap into the home, buying less products, and then having less global pollution is far better. And that's the only way our generations are going to be in a better environment, because at the moment, apart from climate change, global pollution, as I said, has hit the planetary boundary considered safe for humanity. We need to stop buying stuff. We need to reuse our clothes. We need to reuse our products. We need to make things from scratch, et cetera. So hopefully that's not on a downer, but that's where I want to stop.
I love your passion for this. That's extraordinary information. I can't wait to see what you're coming out with next. You mentioned a course that's going to encompass all of this. Is that what you're working on?
Yes.
I'm wow, that is so needed. Oh my goodness. That's incredible. I mean, I want to go back and re-listen to this 10 times and take notes. I mean, that's extraordinary information. Thank you for sharing all of that.
You are very welcome. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about my passion.
Yes. You do have, your book is for sale on Amazon. And where else was it you mentioned?
Book Depository.
Book so you
can get that as well. Yes, I think it's an international online bookstore that you can get, like, if you're in England or other countries. I think Amazon is big in the US. Book Depository is bigger in Australia and UK, for example, in Europe.
Nicole is also giving away a chapter of her book for anyone who would like to email her at nicole@aces.edu.au. And I will have this on the speaker page where you're listening to this interview here today. Nicole, share a little bit more about what that chapter is all going to entail.
Yes, so that chapter in my book, Healthy Home, Healthy Family, looks at chemicals. So how chemicals are regulated, why the exposure standards are not adequate, and it provides and look at the sources of chemicals in your home and tips on how to reduce exposure. So I think of all the chapters in my book, I've got one on allergens, one on electromagnetic fields, one on chemicals, one on drinking water, one on how to build a healthy home. That one on chemicals, I think, will be the most useful for those who are looking at getting pregnant.
Awesome. I'm so excited to dig into that. Everyone, reach out to Nicole and grab that copy of that chapter of that book. And if you want to grab your copy of the book, we have that also linked here and her website, all of the information, everything you need to learn more about what Nicole has shared with us today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Stephanie.